Okay, good morning, everybody. And thank you for coming along to Win 408, where we'll do a deep dive on deploying and managing Windows to Go. Now, given that this is a level 400, I am at least going to assume that everyone in the room knows what Windows to Go is. Yes? Feel free to raise your hand if you don't, and I'll give you the 30-second overview. No? We all good? Awesome. So what I want to go into today is obviously the deployment perspective, but how we get customization of the OS as we do a deployment. Now, most of you have probably tinkered around with the Windows to Go utility that comes with every version of Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. That does not allow you to do customization. It's fine for doing a single one-off build, but in your enterprise environments where you want to do multiple all at once and you want to make sure that there's no post-installation tasks to be done, we want to do some customization. We will look at the device itself, how we're going to get the OS out onto multiple Windows to Go sticks at the same time, and we are going to do a buttload of PowerShell. And then we're going to look at the management. Now, my focus today is I've been working a lot with the guys at IronKey, and they have a product which is currently in private beta, soon to be released in public, that actually gives you the ability to manage the device itself. So we're not just talking about the OS on the device, but the OS and the device. Both of them become managed. Now, this has not been shown anywhere in the world, I believe, so you guys are extremely privileged. Make a note of the date, time, mark it in your diaries, tell your grandchildren, stuff like that. And then we will look at how we actually provision our users, we'll look at the device management itself, what our options are, and how we can do OS management to produce a seriously kick-ass user experience, because it is a very user-focused solution. Now, most Windows to Go presentations that you'll see focus very strongly on the SOE itself. This is fair enough because Windows to Go is a product or a property, if you like, of the Windows OS itself. Everyone has a Windows SOE, and if you're running Windows 8, Windows 8.1, or Win 7, not Win 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, your current enterprise SOE can be a Windows to Go SOE as well. Most presentations kind of stop there. I'm going to go further and show you why the device itself matters. Think about it. If you deploy a Windows SOE onto a Dell, onto an HP or something, obviously from a user perspective, without the OS, you don't have an experience, but without the device to put it on, you don't have anything at all. Windows to Go is exactly the same. The device matters. Okay, it may not matter as much. It might be 10%, 15% of the overall solution, but without it, you have nothing. So we will definitely take a look at that. And then we will look at the management experience, because once you've got these sticks out in the wild and users are actually using them, how do we manage them? Now, obviously, the best managed environment is one where the users sit still with their hands on the desks and don't move and don't say anything. But that's never going to occur, all right? So we need a good practical way to manage these once they're out in the wild. We don't want to lose control over them, and especially if anyone has decided to take new photos of themselves and store it on them, not that that would ever occur, how do we help and protect them against a scenario like that? So we're going to focus on, we're going to look at, so with customization and deployment, we're going to do a heck of a lot in terms of PowerShell. We are going to look at the provisioning of the user. So how do we lock the user themselves to the device, not just to the OS, but to the device itself? We are going to look at what we can add to the user experience in terms of management, in terms of syncing, in terms of access back into the corpnet, to make it a brilliant user experience, and then we're going to look at the management stack. What do we actually need in order to manage? Now, I am going to jump ahead just a little bit to a deployment because I want to get this done. So a deployment of a Windows image can take, anywhere 20, 25 minutes. It depends. I want to kick one off now. so that it's done during the presentation. So, yes. So what I've got is a PowerShell script that myself and a couple of my colleagues put together. It's built around a couple of scripts which are already out there. So Microsoft did a PowerShell script earlier this year, I believe, to allow you to do parallel builds of a Windows image across multiple Windows to go sticks. It didn't do a lot in terms of customization. Let me just make sure I've got the right scripts. Now, can you guys at the back actually see that? No, I need to fire it up a bit. Sorry about that. How's that? Better? All right, cool. So what I have, so that you can see what I can see. Is down here, hopefully you should see this in a sec. Here we go. You see that? I've got a powered USB 3 hub with a number of Windows to go sticks in there. These two here, the two black ones, are IronKey W300s, and these are the ones I want to target for a build. So I'm going to do a parallel build of my Windows image. But more importantly, I want to be able to customize this. If you do a normal build, what you end up with is a stick that needs all of the post-installation tasks to be done. Okay, it needs the machine name, it needs to be joined to AD, etc., etc. What I want is full customization. So I will be pulling the serial numbers out, and I will be generating a unique unattend for each of these, and then just blasting it out. So, and I'm going to encrypt them on the fly as well, so that once they're built, there is absolutely no work left to be done for an admin. All right, which version do I want? This one. He goes, can I just check something before I hit go and wipe my machines? All right, this is, we will spend some more time going into this a little later. If I take a look, all right, cool. So I should be looking at two sticks. So even though I've got four plugged in and the OS can actually see four, I only want it to pay attention to those two. So the ones which are online and which are ready to go. The other ones are either offline or I don't want to use them yet. So if I kick off here, go. There's my image. It's going to load up my AD module because I am going to do a domain join. Now, just to tempt fate, I'm doing this over a direct access connection back to my domain controller back in Melbourne. I did it this morning. It did work. You weren't there, but it worked. So it's going to load up the module. It's going to prompt me for a couple of variables. So I'm going to give it a BitLocker password. I'll give it a local admin password. And away it goes. Now, obviously, because I don't want to spend all my time looking at a PowerShell script just running, I've kicked these off as a PowerShell sub process. So each of these sticks are being imaged independently. And if I go through, I'll go get job. You can see I've actually got PowerShell jobs running. We should actually... I've got PowerShell jobs running, which are based on the unique computer name of each of those sticks. So every iron key that you take a look at, if you take a look at the back of it, it's got a laser-etched serial number on the back. Now, we can extract that through through the unique ID, through plug-and-play ID, ensuring that when you roll this out, you're effectively treating it like any laptop in your organization. It has a name locked to it, and even easier, the user can even take a look at the back, see the serial number, and tell you what it is, which makes life a lot easier. So that is going away. My two keys are flicking away nicely. So we will come back and take a look at that. Back to the Prezzo. So this is the first thing that we want to do. We want a unique computer name. We can extract that off the stick. The serial number is laser etched. It's not going to change. It's locked. It's as good as a MAC address, if not better. So that's our first one. We can then use that in PowerShell to generate a unique unattended XML so that every push of Windows is uniquely customized for that particular stick. Uh-huh. We can then, as part of the build, do an AD offline domain join. Now, we do need host connectivity to a DC, and we do need privileges in order to do this. But what it means is that once the stick is built, it's in the right OU, it's got the right policies applied, it's got the certs applied, and there is nothing else that needs to be done. If a user boots up that stick on the corpnet, they're in. Nothing else needs to be done. We can also pre-provision direct access. Now, why would we want to do this? There's a very good session by Michael Nystrom at MMS last year. So, MMS 2013, the last one. And he's done quite a lot of Windows to Go built over time in Europe. We're talking thousands and thousands of sticks. And his field experience has been everybody wants to be able to get back into the corpnet. Okay, it's useful. It's a good user experience. Now, there's the direct access approach. There's third-party VPNs and so on. The field experience is if you use direct access, or at least his experience has been, the customers who use the DA, he never really talked to them. He didn't know them. The customers who use third-party VPNs, he knew them really well, because they called him regularly and said, it isn't working again. We can't get policy. It doesn't work. What's happening? Direct access, if you're not using it, I strongly recommend that you look at it. It is also a brilliant add-on for the Windows to Go experience. What it effectively means is that you could provision a stick, you could ship it out to a user who's running an audit at the bottom of a mine, and as long as they can plug into a machine that has internet access, even though they've never logged onto that stick, so they've got no cached AD passwords at all, they can log on. Okay, that's quite a powerful use case. The tunnel is made before the user logs on. It occurs at the machine level, the OS level. And because we've already pre-provisioned everything, the certs are there, the policies are there, the machine knows how to talk back. Now, obviously, if you're going to ship it out somewhere and they don't have internet access, well, this becomes problematic. Okay, but this at least unlocks a scenario that if you're using a third-party product, is not even open to you at all. And then finally, we can inject our host drivers. The general rule is don't just download every device driver you can think of and inject it into your Windows image, because it'll probably boot up on just about any make or model that's out there, but there will be about 5K of usable storage left. So not a great experience. Microsoft have a good TechNet article about which are the most popular makes and models of hardware device drivers that if you want to incorporate into your image, you can. It isn't stuff like go to Dell and download their stuff and go to HP and download theirs. It's, no, you go to Intel or Broadcom or Marvel. Okay, you go to the hardware manufacturer, not the OEM. Okay, because that gives your OS the best chance of being able to boot up onto any machine that your user plugs it into. And bearing in mind, all you really need is VGA, network, and storage. If you've got those, then as long as it can boot, it can see what it's meant to talk to, and it can display something on the screen, it can talk to the internet and grab what it needs after that. Device drivers that require an install are a pain in the proverbial. You need to address those on a case by case. Now, depending on your deployment methodology, you could be... some of them, you can do the install onto like a test build and then actually extract the INFs and the CABs out of C program files. Okay, there's a few that will allow you to do that. Given that you're booting up on a Windows to go device, the question really is, well, how much of the underlying host functionality do you actually require? For example, if a machine has a fingerprint scanner, which can only be enabled by use of a manually installed package, well, how critical is it really? I mean, does the user need it just for that one particular time or not? If you're doing management with Config Manager, it is possible at least to publish those packages so that the user fires it up and they say, oh, look, I'm logged onto a Dell, and a Dell Latitude E6530 or whatever it is. So you could, if you wished, publish an application package in the application catalog, called Windows to go pack for Dell Latitude E6530. User logs on, hit that, drops it down, installs what they need. Okay, so yeah. All right, now, deploying the device, what can we do? I did miss one off here, which is Config Manager, but I'll address that manually. So what can we do? The Windows utility is the one that's incorporated into every Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 build. Okay, that allows you to deploy a WIM to a single stick. No customization, no bulk builds, nothing along those lines. It's pretty straightforward. IronKey provides you a utility if you require that, and that will also let you do a single device, and as well as multiples. Now, by serial, I actually mean devices of the same type. So it will allow you to do a parallel build of 300s or 500s. Config Manager, which is not on that list, lets you do a single, plus obviously the OS customization. Have any of you tried to do a Windows to go deployment using Config Manager? You can, yeah, one person at the back. Was it a wonderful experience? It was all right. Yeah, it's cumbersome. It's really cumbersome. It uses fully pre-staged media. It's not dynamic. It's really quite, it isn't fun. So can you tell where this is going to go? Of course. Hey, PowerShell. Lets you do absolutely everything. So the script that myself and my colleagues put together, we're all SOE guys, Config Manager guys. Okay, so we tried to go for the experience of a Config Manager build, so full customization, optimization, everything, but parallel builds of different types. So you can do a 300, a 500, 700, another model, it doesn't matter at all. Same script, does it all, hands off. So, how are we going to do this? This is PowerShell. So, as we saw earlier on, I've got multiple disks plugged in. Okay, how do I actually identify which ones I want? So, the first thing is that I'm going to generate an array of all the disks that are there. Now, it's a relatively simple where object. I'm looking at disk hardware info. I'm pulling that back in, and I'm saying, all right, I don't want it to be a boot disk. I do want it to be USB storage. If the unique ID has got prod_inkey_workspace, I know that's a W300, and that's in the plug-and-play ID. And usefully, that also contains the serial. And if it's got prod_inkey public, it's the public part of a W500, which is the encrypted version. Okay, I don't want to do just anything like prod_inkey because then I will also pick up the unlocked OS part and I can't deploy to that until I unlock it. But now I've got an array. I can say, okay, I know what it looks like, so your device type is 300 or it's 500. Now, bearing in mind this particular process works for anything that has a model in the disk ID. Okay, so any type of USB stick, any type of Windows to go workspace. So the code has been customized for a particular product set, yes, but it's just code. Customize it any way that you like. What do we then do? We know the device type, so it's either a 300 or a 5. I've got a little function to either get a 300 serial or a 500 serial. The 300 serial is just looking at the PNP ID, so the USB hardware path, effectively. The serial number's embedded in there, and I run a regular expression against that, pull it out, and return it, and we're done. And therefore, my computer name is W300-serial number, and I've got a unique name, model type, tied to the disk. If it's a 5, same principle applies. I've got to do a few extra little things because it's not in the serial number's not in the plug and play ID, but I end up with a consistent computer name. What we then want to do is, because we want to be able to do this in parallel, that's where we split the jobs off and assign them as a sub PowerShell process. Now, because I'm doing a Windows deployment onto a stick, what do I need? I need device drive letters because I'm going to assign those to the stick. I need to build a boot partition and an OS one. And it's the host that does all the work. So the host needs to be able to say, copy this file here, copy that file there. It does it using a drive letter. Now, if I let the sub-processors fight it out amongst themselves and say, hey, I want the next available drive letter, I want G, I want H, I can't arbitrate between them. So what happens is what happened, and the whole thing just falls over because one attempts to build a partition on a drive letter that another stick is already using, and it can't do that, and then the other one tries to overwrite that one, and ooh, it's ugly, really nasty. So what I want to do instead is use some PowerShell funkiness to build up an array, and I want to then arbitrate and assign a drive letter out to every sub-process so that they know what they're meant to be working with. So what I can do, I've got a function. All that does is looks at all the device drive letters that the host OS is not making use of and builds them into an array. And that's all it does. So when you look at the array, it's, you know, F, H, I, J, K, and so on. We'll then set an arbitrary variable, a device index. Just call it 1. What we can then do is a for each, you can say, all right, your system drive letter is drive letters in the array, your drive index minus 1, which equals 0, and then another 0 after that. So if you know your PowerShell arrays, doing an array square bracket 0 returns what? Ooh, you guys need to learn yourself some PowerShell. It's funky. If you've got an array, the array name square bracket 0 returns the first value of the array. Okay, and adding on an extra 0 and anticipates the fact that the value that's going to be returned has two characters in it, which it does, F colon. So what I'm saying is, look at the array, pick out the first entry, and then pick out the first character of that entry, which is, in this case, might be F. And the next one is exactly the same, but without that end square bracket 0. So all I'm saying here is that my system drive letter is F and my system drive path is F colon. I then do exactly the same thing for my OS. But now my drive index is not drive index minus 1, which equals 0. It's just drive index, which equals 1. So what I've done in that little bit there is that I've looked at my array of available drive letters. I've picked off the first one, the second one, and I've passed those out to the sub-process. I then increment the drive index by 2. and the next process comes along and says, right, what are the drive letters I'm meant to have? You get, instead of F and G, you get H and I. And the next one comes along, you get J and K. Does that make sense? Yeah? PowerShell arrays are awesome. Until they stop working, in which case they're the worst thing ever invented. All right. So let's take a look at what this actually looks like, and we'll break it down a bit. How's this going? Yep, still going. All right. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time in ISE. These are my functions. I've already gone through and I've loaded them into memory so I can call on them when I need to. To give an example, this is my get 300 serial. It looks at a unique ID, pulls a regex in, and then passes the return value back. Nice and easy. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to deploy this to a W500. Now, the 500 is the encrypted model. I will be giving away later on a 300 and a 500. So, but if you leave, then I won't. Oh, dear. So I'm going to deploy this to a 5 that I've got ready to go. To speed things up, I've already initialized it, and I've unlocked the OS partition. So if I take a look in my device, in my disk management, this is it here. So disk 7 and disk 8. As you can see, there's a WinPE partition. That's the one that I use to talk to the device. And I've got my 32 gig OS partition, which I've unlocked. If I had not unlocked it, it would see disk 8 and it would see no available storage on it at all. That's why in my original PowerShell script, where I go and enumerate all of the available disks, I want to make sure to exclude that one, because until I unlock it, I've got nothing, and it will attempt to deploy to something that doesn't exist. Not a lot of fun. So I'm going to take this get disks, and I'm going to modify it slightly. And I'm going to modify it slightly by putting in secure, because I have actually unlocked it. So I'll hit that. And what I should get in my variables is it should go, yep, no problem. Let's have a look. And there it is. So that's my secure. Now, I'm not going to do a for each because, well, there's only one, so it's not a lot of point. I could if I wish, but I'm not going to. So what I'll do, I still need the disk variable. So this is where I'll pick the first value in that array and go. If you want to see whether a variable is an array or not, easiest way, just do disks, get type, in this case it's actually a sim instance, but in other ones it is an array. I'll show you a proper array later on. I've got disk, all right, cool. There's my disk, so disk number 8, and it's ready to go, partition is raw, cool. Oh, as you can see, this has just popped up. So on one of my 300s at least, the imaging process is done, the AD join is done, all the provisioning is done, and now it's going through and encrypting it using BitLocker. So I need to load in a few variables. I need my WIM file. I need my AD module. Direct access, don't fail me now. Do any of you run Plex Media Server at home? Yeah? If you run Direct Access, you can open up the web browser to your Plex Media Server and stream your music collection to you wherever you are. Just another use for an enterprise VPN. All right. Now, I will whack in a BitLocker password, even though I'm not going to be using it. I want a local admin password. I'll confirm it. and then I'll just run my validate across it, and then I'll grab all my variables. Now these are my variables which I'm interested in populating my unattend XML. Okay, I can obviously modify that if I need to. But the point is that you can customize absolutely anything. PowerShell can build your unattend XML for you. It's just a file. Okay, and PowerShell can very easily write line after line after line into an existing file based on variables that you nominate. I've got my domain name in there, I've got time zone name, and I've got a few little extra things that are relevant. So if I want my device drivers, they're in there. If I want to slipstream some updates, some OS updates during the build, I can do that too. I've got a little running from folder so that I can build a folder for every stick that I'm going to use. So I've got somewhere to put the unattend. And I've got the URL of my IronKey gateway server because it's a 500 and I want it applied. It already is applied, but we're good. All right. So what we'll do, let's generate our array of drive letters. And you can see there, there's my list. It's just an array of drive letters. So I can call it up, drive letters, there they are. And if I do get type, please tell me this is a string. Oh, it's an array. There we go. So that's an array. If it was just a single value, it would probably say string or maybe integer, something along those lines. So we'll get rid of that. And we'll set our drive index. Now, I'm not going to do a for each because I don't have multiple disks. Let's just verify the device type. And let's go, hey, device type, you're a 500. Okay, so it knows that. Excellent. Clear that. So else if we can do that one here. So let's generate our device serial. Don't like you. Disk. Wow. All right. No, let's go back up and take a look. What's going on here? So I've got my get W500 serial. So it's a disk. It is the disk number. It's this bit. It's the device letter. Okay. So I haven't actually nominated what it's going to be. Normally, this script is designed in such a way that it's not talking directly to the secure OS disk at this point. It's talking to the public, in which case it knows what the letter is going to be. Okay. Now, normally then what it does, it then talks to the letter and says, hey, I've got a little IronKey application I'm going to run that's going to extract the serial number. You tell me what that is, and away we go. Now, all I need at this point is, so my IronKey workspace is the public partition here. That's F. So all I've got to do is device letter equals F. And then if I go back and I run this serial again, exception calling matches. All right, fun games. So, device serial equals 1111111. Here we go. No problem. All right, I'll create a little payload folder. I'll generate my computer name. My computer name is W500 plus my serial number. And let's create a new folder to put that in. Away we go. I'll copy across some files which I would normally need. I'll bypass those little bits because I don't actually need to apply. So the appliance INI file is a file that tells a 500 what the admin unlock code is and what the IronKey gateway is. I've already applied that as a manual step, so I don't need to do that. and I don't need to redirect to the secure. So what I can do is clear the disk. I'll initialize the disk, and then I'll go through and get my system drive letter paths and my OS drive letter paths. So you can see down here, I've got system drive letter path, OS drive letter, OS drive path. So it's just JJ colon II colon, all ready to go. And I'll go through and build my unattend based on all this information that I have. And if I want to see where that actually got built to, locally, got my running folder, deployments, there's my W500, and there's my unattend XML with everything that I need in there. So it's got my organization environment. It's got, now it does have the local admin password in plain text, because that's what a fully unattended one does if you're not using Config Manager to store it. So you'd probably want to blow that away at the end. All right, so that's done. That's done. And this is where I would normally start my sub process. I don't need to, because I'm only doing the one. So let's go through, create my system petitions. Set petition, format volume. So this is the FAT32 petition that I need in order for the boot files. There's that. Come on. If this doesn't work, which it may not, I do another one. There we go. It's fine. Okay, same for the OS. Set petition. And format it. Come to a level 400 session and watch a guy formatting petitions. All right, and then we'll actually do the application of the image. So this is a straight out DISM. I've already got my index equals one, which is the image within the WIM that I want to apply. Obviously, what this means is that if you have multiple indexes within your corporate SOE, you can nominate whichever one you want to do. So let's say you had a stick that was a 300, a 500, a 700, something else that was not a 9 key at all. You wanted a different index from the same WIM, you can use the script to put the right one on there. So we'll kick that off. And it's going to run for probably about 20 minutes, so we may see the end of it, or we may not. Let's see how we go. All right. Any questions on what we've seen so far? Sir? Sorry, I missed that. Can you put multiple images on the stick with multiple, with a boot menu that would allow you to choose? Yeah, but I don't see why not. So from a Windows 8 perspective, it's just the BCD bootloader, which you can talk to directly if you need to. The partitioning, I mean, I'm using all of the available space on the disk for a single OS. You'd have to do some funky stuff with your boot partitioning, but yeah, you should be able to do that. Now, if you're going to use PowerShell for the entire thing, then Windows only, because it's coming from a WIM. If you wanted to do Linux-based builds, well, Linux and Windows to go, it's Windows to go, not Windows to go for Linux. So, yeah. But yeah, in theory, sure. All right, management, while that's building away. So this is the bit that no one has seen publicly yet. The W500s and the W700s in the latest firmware build, 4.3, which is not out yet, allows you to talk directly to an on-premises management gateway. Now, what that does is it's just an internal web service. It's not an extra layer of management overhead. There isn't another console. There's nothing along those lines. What it does, it effectively acts as a translator between the Iron Key device and Exchange Active Sync at the back end. So the EAS sees it as a mobile device. Once you've got that up and operational, you can get user information directly from AD down onto the device. The password that the user uses to unlock the device and boot into it is their domain password, which makes life a lot easier. We can do a password reset if they forget that, or their domain password changes and it doesn't change on the device. We can use EAS to keep that in sync. And more importantly, we can initiate a full remote wipe of the device. So if the user leaves it on a bus, either they or the administrator can go, oh, well, so much for that, kaboom, and it's gone. How do we provision our user? We build it using PowerShell process or whatever other process we want to use. They enter in their username and password. It then talks via the Iron Key gateway to Exchange Active Sync and Exchange, which then in turn talks to AD and validates the user's identity. That username and password then gets written back onto the device and it's ready to go. So let me show you what that actually looks like. Now, the fun thing is that I can't show you the console for the management gateway because there isn't one. One here. All right. Now, he looks at the 15 devices which he does have, thinking which is the one that he wants. Should be this one. All right, so in the OS, sorry, in the public disk part of the Iron Key itself, we've got a little utility here that we'll go through and and this is one that he's already pre-provisioned. Man, okay. That's okay. We can still log in. So what this is going to do, I'm entering the password of my demo user. Okay, so it's just password. Now, when I ran through the process, and if I get a chance, I'll provision it off this one we're building here. All it does, there's not that much to see. The user types in the username password, and they basically see data pumping down and goes, all right, it's unlocked, it's ready to go. And they basically get a screen that looks exactly the same as So it's in there, it's initialized, and we're ready to go. Now, we can see we've got my actual user account, the one that I'm using to log on to this. I can initiate a password sync if I need to. If I've got any preferences, I can do an auto lock, or some of this information can actually flow down from the management gateway itself. And information about the device itself, so serial number and so on. So if I need to give that information to help desk for whatever reason. Now, once I've got it set up like that, I'm going to flick back to over here where my build's going on. If my user then logs on to EAS, in this case I'll run it as the user, default, it loads up onto 9MSN, which has got to be the ugliest homepage I've ever seen. All right, there we go. Then we go into options. It's phone, mobile devices, and there's my IN key. So it does actually see it now as a managed device that's in there. Now, I've also got that hooked up to Config Manager using the Exchange connector as well. So if I, so as a Config Manager admin, I only really want to manage everything from the one spot. So I'll jump in and show you how I can actually do that. But let's say my user is out and about, and they lose this stick. Well, they can at least log on from it from anywhere, jump into OWA, and they can go wipe. Yep, I want to wipe it. So it's in there now as a wipe pending, and it will keep sending that packet through EAS, through the gateway, and onto the device itself. So we should be able... Now, bearing in mind, this is a live remote wipe from Melbourne to Auckland over direct access. Let's give this a crack. All right, so you know what? I'm going to lock that. I'm going to force another talk. Oh, dear. So much for that. So if anyone, even if someone finds it, they know the user's password, not that that's a very difficult thing to do. Hopefully when Oren Thomas's session from yesterday is published and stuck up online, you can take a look at that and find out the various ways that you can use to make that far less likely. But even if that occurs and the user's jumped in and goes, no, no, I've lost it, wipe, we're done. Now that was live, okay, so there's no smoke and mirrors there. So that's jumping through a number of hoops. That's going through conference wireless here. That's going through direct access here. It's from Melbourne to Auckland. Okay, so that's as fast, that's as real time as I think any enterprise is really going to expect. So, oh dear, we're done. So much for that. And I can actually go in and I can reinitialize that. One thing I do need to do is I need to go back into EAS and I'll say, stop wiping that device now. It's been done. We're okay. Because if the user jumps back in and reinitializes it, he goes, yay, we're good. Oop, wipe. Yay, we're good. Oop, wipe. Okay, so that's obviously a pain. We don't want to do that. Now, more importantly, now if I go back, it's already updated. Remote wipe is successful. Yep, done. So you know what, I might actually just get rid of that. And if I go into my mailbox, what I should see is an email saying, hey, I went through and I wiped it. Okay, so we're done. Now all of that is at the device level. That's not the OS. Okay, we haven't even touched the operating system yet. That's just at the device. So, what do you reckon? Cool, huh? I like it. So that's my provisioning. Come on. Here we go, OS management. Now, I've talked about the benefits of direct access in terms of being able to get the user to log on and in terms of them being able to stream their private music collection to a customer site. User virtualization is a fairly critical one. Does anybody have MDOP? MDOP licensing, Microsoft Desktop Optimization? Yep. You get MDOP as part of, sorry, you get UEV as part of MDOP. Now, when your user logs on, they probably want a consistent user experience that they would normally get from their corporate laptop or from wherever it is that they log on to. You could use roaming profiles if you hate them and you hate the world. You could definitely use roaming profiles. Better still to use a local agent, UEV, and have that profile sync down onto their machine so that it's all totally local. Now, a Windows to Go scenario is a brilliant use case for this. User logs on, profile settings, preferences, application settings, and so on, sync down. And if they're talking over direct access, you don't need to make that information available externally or do any weird reverse proxying or anything along those lines. They're already connected. Obviously, we want BitLocker, and we want BitLocker with MBAM if we can possibly manage it. Again, MBAM, so Microsoft BitLocker Administration Tool, is something that you get with MDOP. So far we've got UEV and MBAM. There's also AppV. There's a number of other cool things as well. So if your organization doesn't have MDOP, definitely look at it. There's some tools in there that make for a brilliant user experience. So the 300s don't have a crypto chip in them. We want to protect those. Let's use BitLocker. However, they don't have TPMs. So a Windows to Go stick that you encrypt is not using the TPM chip of the host, because it doesn't know what the host may or may not be. The host may not have a TPM. So what you really want to do is do the encryption using MBAM, because then the recovery key is held on premises, which means that the user can do a self-service unlock, or they can call the help desk from the bottom of a mine in Western Australia and say, my recovery key is this, I've forgotten my BitLock password, and we can then do a challenge response, and we can get them up and operational again. Nice and cool. Work folders. Alan Birchall, I think, is doing a session on work folders. Is it happening now? Do you know? Or is in? Are you here instead of learning about work folders? Good, if you are. But work folders is something that we can do using a Server 2012 file server, or is it R2? It's one of those. However, it's inbuilt into the OS. Think of it as effectively an accessible enterprise version of Dropbox. So a user can be out on their stick, they've got the direct access, and files from their file server are syncing down locally. They work, it syncs up, they log on somewhere else, there they are. Nice and easy to use. And of course, from a management perspective, we can either use Windows Intune, so we can drop that agent onto the box, or we can do full-blown management using Config Manager. Now, the device management, we've already seen. If we forget the password, we can do a reset. We can, users are not its, as much as it occasionally feels like it. They can initiate a remote wipe themselves, or the admin can initiate a wipe. If we're using Config Manager to pull the ActiveSync information in, then obviously we can initiate a remote wipe from the Config Manager console without having to go into Exchange. And we also have a tampering self-destruct on the 500s and 700s. So if anyone tries to break it open and think, maybe I could tool around with a crypto chip, or maybe I can just guess the password, oh dear. If you remember that scene from, I think, the first Mission Impossible, where he's on the plane and the USB stick explodes, it isn't quite as dramatic as that, because that does tend to set off smoke alarms. But the device is unusable. It's dead. It's not just revert to factory settings. It is no more. Okay? That's the end of that. No more. Goodbye. So let's take a look at the management. We've seen, fortunately, these sticks are very robust, which is just as well as it just fell off the stage. The stage is a little shaky. It's nothing to do with the amount that I eat while I'm at TechEd. All right. So let's look at the device management. Now, I work in Config Manager. Therefore, that's where I want to do all of my work. Oh, thank you. You've encrypted. Actually, how's my build coming along over here? Still going. All right, we may get it done. I don't think we are. We've got about 5 minutes left. Actually, what I will do while we're waiting for this, so we can actually see what the user experience is like, I've got a 300 that's fully built, ready to go. And what I've done, I've got Hyper-V running on this box, and then I've done a direct pass through of the 300 to the virtual machine. You can only do that if the disk is offline, which it currently is. So we'll fire that one up, kick it off, and start up and boot from the stick. There's my BitLocker, there's my challenge. Go. Now, I'm glad I remembered to turn this on, because hopefully I should be able to show you something that's quite cool. So, all right. Let's get you in. While that's logging in, I have my Exchange connector rigged up within Config Manager. So it's pointing to the same Exchange server that is driving EAS for the iron keys. And then if I go into Assets and Compliance and I take a look, I've got a few collections which are automatically in there. I've got one for my 300s. They don't sync over Active Sync, but my 500s do. So I can get all of that information about that, about machines which are syncing through. I can pull that out of Exchange, and I can pull that out of the Config Manager agent too. If I wanted to initiate a remote wipe from here, I could retire wipe, and I can do wipe mobile and get that rid of and get that out of Config Manager. Now you're fired up. Good. What we should see is I've got connectivity. Can you guys see that at the back? So I've got connectivity via direct access. So if I wanted to go and ping a internal file server, should be cool. Pings, excellent. We're done. I have my so I'm on a stick. I'm out in a I'm at the bottom of a mine in Western Australia. I have connectivity back to the corp net. It's like I'm sat at a desk, apart from the bandwidth, obviously. I've got work folders. It's ready to go. And I have synchronization of my profile settings. Now, that is happening behind the scenes, and it's not bugging me. So I don't have to wait in the logon process for a roaming profile to drop down. Okay, it's not holding me up. I can work fast. Now, obviously, the guy that you really dislike who's going out to the bottom of the mine, you enable roaming profiles for him. Okay, or if you're about to leave, you turn on roaming profiles and you leave. But one of the things that, of course, we really want to do, this is, of course, awesome for going in, but what about coming back out? As a help desk operative, I want to be able to assist my users. So I've enabled manage out. Okay, so what I'm doing, I'm initiating Config Manager remote control from my server in Melbourne that is picking up the fact that this is a direct access connected device and it's traversing that tunnel back here to Auckland right here. And it's going, yep, no problem, remote control. Yeah. Are you sold on direct access yet? If not, you should be. Come on, you can stream music over it. Bugger the remote control. You can stream music on it. Game of Thrones. All right, so the point of setting it all up like this is that the Windows to Go sticks should be no different in the way that you manage them. Sorry, the OS should be no different to the way that you manage any other platform in your environment, any other laptop, any other machine, VDI, you name it. It's the same corporate SOE. All the tools and utilities and agents are there, and you can do some seriously nice, seamless remote management. So I don't know if this is done yet. It probably isn't. No. All right. So we're going to run out of time, which is a shame. But here we go. So this wasn't scrubbed. All right. Speakers, please list other breakout sessions. Oops. Okay. Okay. Well, the other stuff is Orin's session from yesterday. Alan's on work folders. I did a session yesterday on compliance. Windows to Go is really useful for compliance because if you want to deploy MBAM, you want to deploy BitLocker, you want to make sure that the OS is secure, you can roll out group policies and get Config Manager to do the compliance checking on that. Now then, we have a lot of resources, Virtual Academy, Virtual Labs, Channel 9. I'm on Channel 9, hooray. Actually, that's really confusing because in Australia there is a free-to-air channel, which is Channel 9. So when I tell people that I'm on Channel 9, they go, wow, really? And I said, no, not that Channel 9. Microsoft Channel 9. And they go, what? Nerd. And complete your sessions and you may win something. Now, you can win something absolutely now. So let me see. I've got a W500, which is the titanium shockproof, waterproof, jump up and down on it proof one with a crypto chip. And I've got a W300, which is the one that isn't. So let me think. I should have thought of some questions. What city are we in? No, that's too easy. Let me think. Okay. This is for the W500. Okay. What version of the W500 and / W700 firmware is required to use on-prem? Hands, please. I'm nearly deaf, sir. Yes? 4.3, indeed. Come and grab yourself an iron key. Enjoy. Just so that you know, that one actually talks to my iron key gateway, so it's the one I wiped. Wipe. So the final one is for the W300. So let's have a think. What's a good question for a W300? Oh, I'm putting you guys on the spot now. All right, when you deploy BitLocker to a W300, what should you use? Have a W300. The correct answer is NBAM. Well done. So thank you very much, guys. Grab some lunch. Any questions, I'm here to answer them. And have a great rest of the Tech Ed.